Welcome to episode 30. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup and with community health in particular, we have regular meetings scheduled with both the HWU for Health and Allied Managers and Administrative Workers, as well as the MSAV, which is the union that covers dietitians, pharmacists and psychologists. However, we still do not have regular meetings scheduled with VAPA. Instead, VAPA, with respect to allied health professionals, has made an application to the Fair Work Commission seeking a majority support determination with respect to bargaining. Keep an eye on the community app for details with respect to that application. Regarding our health services, we are conducting reference groups with respect to the dental agreement following the receipt of a log of claims from the CPSU. We also have meetings scheduled with the CPSU on Wednesday the 9th of August. We're looking forward also to meeting this week with the Regional Health Services Nurse Executive Group. And with respect to doctors' bargaining, members will recall that the frequency of meetings has increased from a half day per week to 2 days per week. The first of those is a Tuesday where we focus generally on doctors in training, and the Thursday focuses on the specialists. Summaries of these meetings are posted on the app. If it is that you are wanting to keep abreast of the developments of the negotiations for that agreement, do log on to the app and you'll be able to see which subjects were discussed and be able to provide your feedback if you wish. We've also got some rural and regional forums coming up in September. Members in the rural and regional areas may have received an agenda by now, but in terms of those dates, on the 5th of September, we'll be in the Grampians region, this time at Ararat. On the 7th of September, we'll be in the Hume region at Mansfield. On the 11th of September, in the Gippsland region, we'll be in Wonthaggi. On the 14th of September, for the Barwon South region, we'll be going to Colac. And then finally, on the 26th of September, for the Loddon Mallee region, we'll be going to Swan Hill. Just a reminder to members that those regional forums occur twice per year, in September and March, and that we'll be going to a different place within each region each time we go out. And as always, full details of all our activities can be found on the VHA community app. And that ends this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. Joining me this week and making his debut appearance at what I like to refer to as the ultimate hot desk is the newest member of VHAA's workplace relations team, Rem Richards. Welcome, Rem.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, for those members who haven't spoken to you as yet, could you tell the members a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I came from the Fair Work Commission. I held various roles there over a seven-year period. I started in the unfair dismissals team at a conciliation and arbitration level, and then I moved into the award modernisation team, where we looked at modern awards, and we reviewed them on a four-yearly basis, and we also assisted the full benches that took carriage of those awards. And then from there I moved into the agreement assessing team, where we assessed agreements for approval that were lodged at the commission.
So just in terms of the work that you did do at the Fair Work Commission, was that under your own name?
At times it was under Rem. At some other points it was under George. It just depended what day of the week it was.
So for those members who saw a podcast a couple of weeks ago where we were discussing discussing a subject and we had a look at the album cover for the George Baker selection. So we'll just bring up a graphic with respect to that album and a picture of your good self. And I think people would agree that the resemblance is, it's the wrong side of uncanny.
Definitely is. I was hoping when I came for my interview here that that wouldn't be brought up and that I would just get through unscathed, but unfortunately that didn't happen.
As everybody at VHA is a big fan of the George Baker selection, it would have been of great assistance.
Yeah.
Rem, would you do the honours and reveal the clue for this week's discussion subject?
Sure.
So for the benefit of those members who are listening to this podcast rather than watching, would you be good enough to describe the object that you see there?
It's a book on... Is it George Baker?
It's not George Baker, but you're in the right neck of the woods. This book is entitled Comfort Eating with Nick Cave. and contains a range of vegan recipes from the Prince of Darkness.
Yep.
And that leads us to today's subject, which is the agreement assessment process. In the same way that Nick expounds on the ingredients to go into a delicious vegan meal, we'll be talking today about the ingredients to making an agreement at the Fair Work Commission.
Correct. I like that.
So let's start at the top. How does the Fair Work Commission go about assessing enterprise agreements?
Yep. So the agreement will get lodged at the Commission. The Commission have an agreement assessing team. Within that team, they assess the enterprise agreement against a five-step checklist. That checklist splits up the overall assessment between the forms and signatures, various pre-approval requirements, whether or not the agreement has consistent mandatory terms, and they also look at the national employment standards and whether they are also consistent with the national employment standards. And then lastly, they perform the better off overall test.
So in terms of that assessment process, it breaks it down into five categories.
Yep.
Let's go through each of those categories in turn.
Yep. So when the applications are lodged at the Commission, the first thing that we check for is the whether those have met the signature requirements. So in accordance with Section 185 of the Fair Work Act, the person signing the forms need to provide a full address. They also need to provide their title. And then from there, there is also in the rules where if they are witnessed, if the applications need witnessing at all, that should be done by the appropriate person. So those appropriate people could be a lawyer, someone that is a pharmacist, or a justice of the peace.
So when you say appropriate person, that's people who in an appropriate occupation, as opposed to somebody who is just judged to be appropriate.
Correct.
And what are some of the important pre-approval requirements that go through to that second category?
Yep. So there are quite a few pre-approval requirements, but the ones that have the potential to really, I suppose, knock out an agreement are around the notice of representational rights and whether the employer under Section 173 of the Fair Work Act has provided the NERR 21 days prior to the commencement of voting. The other one is whether or not the employer took all reasonable steps to give a copy of the notice to each employee that would be covered by the agreement.
So we did a session on the NERR a few weeks ago, and just that reminder about all employees.
Yeah.
And the significance of all employees doesn't mean everybody who's at the worksite, can include people who are away from the worksite.
Correct.
Such as people on parental leave.
Yep. So most employers in that case would be posting out the NERR. Some employers are a bit more technologically savvy than others, and they will have an intranet website where that'll be posted to. The Commission also needs to look at whether the agreement was generally agreed to. And some of those things are ensuring under Section 180 of the Fair Work Act that the employer took all reasonable steps to ensure that the agreement was made available within the 7-day period, that they notified the relevant employees of the time and place that the vote would take place, and also the method of the voting that would take place as well. And lastly, that the employer has explained all the terms of the agreement to those that will be covered by the agreement, but also those that have particular circumstances. So they can be people that have, I suppose, cultural or language differences, and really taking the time to explain those terms and the effect to those sorts of employees.
So that's really to ensure that the explanation is adequate for the people to whom it's being explained.
Correct.
So just with respect to mandatory terms, there are mandatory terms under the Fair Work Act. What role does that play in the agreement assessment process?
Yep, so an agreement assessor will look at the flexibility term under the agreement. They'll look at the consultation term under the agreement as well as the dispute resolution term. Employers are free to draft their own terms, but they must be compliant with the Act. One of the, for example, would be the consultation term. If an employer is to draft their own term, they need to make sure that it talks about changing ordinary hours or roster hours, or that it has a mechanism in there to talk about major workplace change.
So it's not that it can't be different, it's simply that it must meet that minimum standard.
Correct.
And you also talked about the other category of assessing an agreement as to whether it is compliant with the national employment standards.
Yeah, so these are things where we talk about under Section 62 of the Fair Work Act, that there's a maximum weekly hours of 38 hours per week for a full-time employee, that there is an entitlement for those taking parental leave to extend their parental leave by a further 12 months. So really checking for those sorts of consistencies under the Act and against what's provided in the agreement.
So just in terms of what I'm mindful of is that the Fair Work Act also talks about what happens if an agreement contains a term that provides for a lesser entitlement than the national employment standards.
Yeah, so if the Commission is concerned about a term that is a lesser entitlement, the Commission might invite the employer to make what we call undertakings, which would operate in the same way as, I suppose, a statutory declaration. So you're undertaking to commit to do something. So in this particular circumstance, if there was an entitlement or term that was inconsistent, the Commission would say you can provide an undertaking to remedy that sort of situation, and then the Commission would consider what is put forward by the employer.
And I'm also mindful, I think, that the Fair Work Act says to the extent that a term provides for a lesser entitlement than the NES, that it has no effect.
Correct.
So just in terms of the better off overall test, the BOOT test, as it's commonly referred to.
Yeah, so the BOOT test is really a global test, and it's a test of all the entitlements or the terms and conditions that are under the agreement. So the Commission needs to be satisfied that the terms and conditions are better off overall when compared to the relevant modern award, but it's at the time of the application being lodged with the Commission. So that would be consistent with Section 193 of the Fair Work Act and how it talks about when it is better off overall and how that affects the agreement.
So in terms of applying the BOOT, I think a lot of people have wondered how that approach, what approach is taken. Is it a line-by-line approach?
No, it's not. I think that can be often confused with the line-by-line approach, but a neat way to summarise how the BOOT is applied is that it's a matter that needs to be advantageous and disadvantageous or disadvantageous, and it's about then balancing the terms or that the terms that fit within those two categories and then coming to a view overall. So as an example, an agreement may offer a reduced penalty rate, whether that's on the weekend or from a shift worker point of view, but if those pay rates are high enough to compensate for that reduction, then the Commission would come to the view that that is still better off overall over a long period of time rather than it not being better off overall.
So that works in that individual items are in effect categorised as being advantageous or not advantageous.
Correct.
Or simply neutral.
Yes.
If they're the same as the modern award.
Yes. So it can be equal to the modern award, but if you do go equal to the modern award, we say something like wage rates. There needs to be a compensation elsewhere in the agreement.
To get to that better off point.
Yes.
As opposed to simply that neutral point.
Correct, yes.
Is it possible to have an agreement that contains a term that is less favourable than the modern award?
Yes, yes. So you can have a term that is less favourable as long as it's better off overall rather than better off in isolation of that particular term. It has to be better off overall.
So I don't think it's possible to talk about the BOOT test at this particular point in time without referring to Coles.
Yes.
I guess the question that I would have is, has there been a shift in the way that the BOOT test has been applied at the Commission since the issue with respect to Coles supermarkets came up?
I don't think there's been a shift per se. There has probably been more of a cautious or strict application of the better off overall test.
But just before you go on, I suspect everyone will be familiar with that case,
yes,
but just in case they're not, could you summarise the Coles supermarket case?
Sure. So the Coles supermarket case, there was a question. In first instance, the agreement was approved and then it went to appeal. because there was a question as to whether or not the agreement did pass the better off overall test. And one of those things was that if you were a part-time employee or you were an employee who was rostered to work a high proportion of shifts, then that attracted a penalty rate when those proportion of employees were actually going to be worse off under that agreement. And it was the view that the full bench had come to, so that the agreement for those particular employees was going to be worse off when you compared it to the award.
So upon appeal, full bench determined that it didn't meet the better off overall test?
Correct.
Does that mean then if the test hasn't changed, if the application of the test, is there perhaps a greater interest in things such as the impact of changes to penalty rates?
Yes, there definitely is a greater interest. So if the Commission in their assessment notices that there is a reduced entitlement such as a penalty rate on a weekend, they will conduct what we would call modelling against those employees. Often for the Commission, they will take a bit of an extreme approach with it. So they at points will ask for rosters for employees that do work over that weekend if there is a reduction, and they will conduct modelling against the agreement and what's provided in the award. So in the absence of that, they'll come to their own view of how it may or may not work, but in the first degree, they do certainly ask for rosters.
Rosters is an interesting one in the sense that there could presumably be disputes as to whether the rosters that are provided are representative.
Yeah, that's correct.
Or necessarily thorough.
That's correct. And, yeah, I think that's come up a few times, but often those, when it gets to that point, I think it's more than likely going to be an arbitrated issue than something that can be dealt with locally. But, yeah, it certainly does get to that point.
That is what the Commission making a decision as to what it needs to be provided?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what does the Coles decision mean for employers?
It means that employers need to demonstrate or provide material to the Commission which demonstrates that each employee covered by the proposed agreement is actually better off overall. It's for an employer who seeks wages that are, you know, that are close to the modern award, they would need to demonstrate to the Commission how those employees are actually better off overall under the agreement when compared to the award.
Okay. And in terms of any boot or procedural issues that are identified, you made the point, and just as a reminder, I think it's worth reiterating,
yes,
there are some flaws that can't be cured.
Yep.
And the NERR is a great example of that.
Yes.
But for some of those boot and procedural issues, what is the process for addressing any defect?
Yep. So the Commission, if they would like the employer to address any procedural or boot issues within the agreement, they may request that you file an undertaking. It's really important to note, though, that under Section 190 of the Act, the Commission must seek the views of the bargaining representatives for the agreement, but also the undertaking must not have a financial detriment to anybody under that agreement, and it must not result in substantial change. So the things that we would consider to, or the Commission would consider to be substantial change, is things around wage rates. So if the wage rates are below what's provided in the modern award, but the increase is only quite small for it to be above what's provided in the modern award, then an undertaking may be requested from the employer. But if they, by putting up those wage rates, it results in substantial change and the Commission can't be satisfied that it would be something that the employees voted on at the time of voting for the agreement, then they won't accept the undertaking. But generally, an undertaking will be requested and it will be provided to the Commission if the employer would like to do that. For things such as the dispute resolution term, often employers will draft their term, and with good intentions, they don't provide for representation, or the employee is not able to have representation throughout the process, which would be inconsistent with the Fair Work Act.
I think the other one with regards to dispute settlement is whether or not it expressly includes, authorises the Commission to deal with disputes about the NES.
Yes, correct. That's exactly right.
And from memory, the Commission is obliged to consider whether an undertaking would deal with any problem or shortfall?
Yes. So they will. They do need to consider those employers that do provide undertakings, and they consider it from both ends, whether it does have whether it does result in substantial change under the agreement, or whether it does cause financial detriment. Often undertakings don't, and they're accepted fairly commonly at the Commission. I've certainly, in my time there, I think I only had one that wasn't accepted because it would have resulted in substantial change.
So just in terms of that agreement assessment team, yes. I take it that the period of time that's necessary to assess an agreement is dependent on the complexity of the agreement and whether there are issues associated with it that need to be resolved.
Yes.
But did that team operate under a particular benchmark in terms of its first report, I guess, with regards to a particular application?
Yeah, I think the internal benchmark from a member perspective is 12 weeks. But the team itself does like to operate within a six-week timeframe. And you're right, it does go onto the complexity. Whilst it's not directly related to this industry, but an industry like the building industry seems to go through the Commission a bit more quicker. And that's just because they seem to offer the same terms and conditions across all their agreements.
So not patent bargaining, just coincidence. Okay.
Yeah, just coincidence.
And just in terms of the work of the agreement assessment team and how that then relates to members of the Commission, does the assessment team provide a report, or is there a meeting? How does that part of it work?
Yep. So with the checklist that the assessment team uses, they will be allocated a member that will consider their checklist. So for an assessor, you would then go through those five steps. There's a variety of questions on that checklist that the assessor needs to answer. At the end of the boot test, they will provide what they have identified to be issues under the agreement. It'll then be given to, I suppose it's a daily roster of who goes up to talk with the members. Not everybody within the team would like to do that. So those that do want to do it, they get to go up and go before the member and really explain the checklist. So what the issues are, whether they are procedural, whether they are boot issues, and how they should be remedied. So for me, if I was looking at something, for example, around the mandatory terms, what I felt would be inconsistent with the Act, I would make mention of that on the checklist, and then I would recommend to the member how we remedy that. So if it's an undertaking, if it's a consultation term, straight away we know that the model term is inserted into the agreement, and if it's something like dispute resolution, then we would recommend some wording for an undertaking, and it would be up to a member to accept that.
So the members of the agreement assessment team effectively have their work checked?
They do.
By a member of the Commission?
Yep.
No pressure then?
No.
Rem, thank you so much for taking us through that particular subject.
No problem.
And welcome to VHAA.
Thank you.
So thank you, Rem.
Thank you.
And thank you, Nick.
Thank you, Nick. And thank you, George.
And George.
Yeah, we can't forget George.
We can't.